Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 25 of the Voices of the Lake podcast series. Normally, we focus on local initiatives here, but today we are extending far and wide to chat about an important topic that not only impacts Kootenai Lake, but all freshwater ecosystems. I'm your host, Joelle Burney, broadcasting from the shores of Kootenai Lake, the ancestral home of the Yakamuki Band of the Tanaha Nation. We also acknowledge the other Tanaha bands in addition to the Senaiks, Shwepnik, and Siks First Nations who have territories and ancestral lands upstream and downstream of Kootenai Lake. The song in this episode is Abuta by Jay Danley and featuring Rich Brown. You can hear more of Jay's stuff on his YouTube channel at Jay Danley Music. Thanks so much for sharing, Jay. As always, a special thanks to our funders, the Regional District of Central Kootenai and Fortis BC, for helping us bring these stories to you. One stewardship project we have on the go here at Focals is cleaning up the Kootenai Lake shoreline. Thanks to support from so many volunteers, we remove hundreds of pounds of trash from Kootenai Lake each year. The amount of plastics and polystyrene we find is honestly crazy, and I've always wanted to know the severity of plastic pollution on our freshwater ecosystems and whether this should be at the top of our list of issues to tackle. So I reached out to Natasha Klasios to get the inside scoop on microplastics in freshwater ecosystems. Natasha is a PhD candidate at the University of British Columbia working under Dr. Michelle Tsang in the Department of Zoology and the Biodiversity Research Center. Her research focuses on increasing knowledge of microplastics pollution in freshwater lakes and investigating the effects of microplastics and other climate change-related stressors on the health of aquatic organisms. I learned so much in this episode. We started with the basics by talking about what microplastics are and how they end up in freshwater ecosystems to begin with. Natasha then shared her research, how she sampled microplastics in 8 different freshwater lakes in BC, and some of her findings. She also provides some really awesome and helpful tips on how to reduce plastic consumption in your daily life and what next steps are coming up for her research. I hope you all enjoy this episode. Welcome, Natasha, to the Voices of the Lake podcast series. Thanks so much for coming on here. I am really, really excited for our chat today because it's around a really important yet kind of new and emerging topic, and that is microplastics in freshwater ecosystems. And yeah, there's so much to talk about this topic. It was really hard to narrow down the questions that I had for you because yeah, there's just so much to learn, and you've been doing so much, you know, research around this particular topic, and it's been really cool to have you on the podcast and interview you. But before we kind of dive into this topic, we kind of want to get to know you a little bit first and break the ice. So when going on an adventure, what are 3 things you can't leave the house without?
Great question. I think probably first of all, it would have to be my phone just for, you know, getting around. And then also definitely my reusable water bottle and probably also some sort of snack, because I get pretty hangry often. So those are probably my top 3 items.
Nice. I can definitely relate to the hangriness. I always have to have trail mix with me on like whenever adventure I go on. That's like my go-to.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and do you want to share a little bit about you and the work that you do?
Sure. So I'm a PhD candidate at the University of British Columbia, and I work in the Department of Zoology and kind of like this Biodiversity Research Center, they call it. And I work under a supervisor, and her name is Dr. Michelle Tsang, and she's incredible. And we look at, our general lab theme is kind of looking at how, you know, changes to the environment affect ecosystems and the animals that live in them, and kind of general ecology and evolution. So I specifically work on microplastics, like you said, and I kind of got involved with that during my undergraduate, and I did my undergrad at the University of Toronto, and basically I started working in a lab through like a friend of a friend who was also working in the lab of Dr. Chelsea Rockman, who's kind of this like microplastic superstar at U of T, and I kind of got hooked on the research pretty early just because I've always kind of been interested in, you know, how contaminants and pollution affect our ecosystems, just because it's something that like I saw growing up and I continue to see today. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of got involved with research and with microplastics. And then I came to UBC to pursue a master's, and then I ended up staying for a PhD, and I'm continuing my kind of interest into like pollution and how specifically plastics affect ecosystems.
Wow, that's so cool. So I was reading a little bit about you online and some of your research, and it's really interesting because studying microplastics in freshwater environments has kind of been, you know, overlooked by marine environments. Because like, whenever I've read about microplastics in the environment, it always talks about, you know, ocean and marine environments. And when you were kind of like diving into your research, was there much like pre-existing data to go off of, or were you kind of figuring out a lot of this on your own?
Yeah, so you're definitely right. There is a heavy bias for marine ecosystems. That's probably just because like the discovery of the Pacific garbage patch is kind of what got everyone started on the microplastics train. And I guess for people who don't know that, it's kind of like a vessel went into a part of the Pacific Ocean. You kind of get into this area where the different currents and gyres kind of like swirl together, and basically like accumulate plastic, and they're mostly microplastic pieces, so you can't really see them. But when people discovered that, it kind of became the question of like, okay, so there's a bunch of plastic waste in the ocean, a lot of it we can't see. So that's probably why the interest has been predominantly ocean-based. So yeah, I chose to work on freshwater lakes because my supervisor has done a lot of freshwater research, and also, just like you said, they're super understudied comparably. So like in BC, they've done a couple of different studies, not a bunch, but a few different studies on like microplastics in the Pacific Ocean or marine environments or coastal environments. So there's absolutely like nothing on freshwater lakes. And generally for Canada too, there's been a lot of interest on kind of the Great Lakes, obviously, because they're so massive, but every other lake has basically, like, there's only been a couple of studies, one in Lake Simcoe that I'm aware of. And then besides that, nothing else has been really published. So kind of like how I went about it was my supervisor and I, we chatted with some people from the Ministry of Environment for British Columbia, and they were really interested, obviously, because no one sampled their lakes for microplastics yet. And they have this really cool long-term lake monitoring program where they have like a bunch of different lakes within the province, and they go and sample those twice a year. So it's like this great long-term data set. And they kind of asked us like, hey, would you be interested in sampling some of these lakes for microplastics? And we decided to. But basically a lot of like the protocols and stuff that I used had been pulled from like places that had sampled freshwater ecosystems and also marine environments, because kind of water sampling is like pretty standard across the board. So I definitely didn't figure it all out on myself, but there was just like a little bit of an adjustment because obviously lakes are quite different than ocean environments and even river environments.
Wow. For somebody who has no idea like what a microplastic is, can you kind of explain like what classifies microplastic?
Totally. So a microplastic is a piece of plastic that's generally classified as being smaller than 5 millimeters in size. So that's probably like about the size of your pinky nail. And so they're synthetic plastic particles, and basically they often get grouped into like primary and secondary microplastics.
Okay.
And primary microplastics are things that are kind of manufactured to be smaller than 5 millimeters in size. So like any sort of like pre-production pellet that they eventually use to like make a plastic item, they're often formed first into like these microplastic particles. Or like the big one, like everyone knows, like those scrubs that used to be in your facial washes, those things are manufactured to be smaller than 5 millimeters in size. So those are like a primary microplastic.
Okay.
But then a secondary microplastic is kind of like what a lot of people are really interested in, because they result from the degradation or like breakdown, fragmentation of like larger plastic items.
Right.
And then they become this microscopic size. So yeah, that's kind of what defines a microplastic.
What are kind of like microplastics made of? Because you said they're kind of like, I guess it depends, but...
Yeah, so it's like, it's a really interesting kind of like suite of contaminants, and the way we talk about it in the field, because they are really diverse, because they can come in at like different polymer types. Polymer is just like a fancy way to say plastic, but you can think of like polyester, like polypropylene, polyethylene, polystyrene. These are all kind of like plastic types, and they can all become microplastics.
Wow.
And then in addition to kind of like different plastic types. There's also, like, of course, the size range goes from like 5 millimeters down to like really tiny particles. So there's a vast size range. And then also they come in different shapes and colors as well. And then also sometimes with different like chemicals and environmental pollutants on them. So it's like they're a super, super diverse suite of contaminant. Definitely like one microplastics are not all like microplastics. It's not like just the pre-production pellet or like the face little sphere that you think of. They are like super diverse.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's super interesting, but it's also like just kind of like a scientific nightmare just trying to
I
like figure out,
bet.
yeah, like the effects and where they're coming from and everything. But
Yeah.
it's interesting.
And even just like I'm trying to picture in my head, just like, I don't know, a plastic water bottle, for example.
Yeah.
And then that breaks down to a bunch of different microplastics. Like that's like a lot. And when you think about all the
Yeah.
plastic in the world that we use, like even in just like BC alone, like
Yeah.
that is a scary thought.
Yeah.
And how
Yeah,
do
and
you
it continues
find?
to break down, which is terrible. Like if you feel like a plastic, like a water bottle, like you said, ends up in a lake or even like just on the shoreline. And then like from like sun rays and UV and any sort of like collision or breakdown, like it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So it's a big problem for like little particles.
Oh my goodness. And how do they usually end up in freshwater ecosystems? Like, I know this kind of probably ties into your research a little bit, but what's maybe the number one way in which they end up into our freshwater ecosystems?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different kind of like sources and pathways of how they can end up in freshwater. Some of the big ones, this is kind of uncommon, but it's definitely a big source for like ocean and river environments, so I'll mention it, but sort of like wastewater effluent. So anything that kind of like when you do your laundry or when you flush your toilet, it all goes to a wastewater treatment plant and then that gets treated, but then that kind of ultimate like flow out eventually ends up in some sort of aquatic ecosystems. It's less likely, especially in BC, for those to be like outflowed into lake environments, but they do get into our rivers and eventually the ocean. So that's a huge contributor of microplastics. For lake specific, a big one that we that's kind of talked about in the field is from agricultural runoff. So like runoff from agricultural fields when it runs, because kind of interesting, the wastewater effluent, when they treat that kind of like water, murky water with all of the garbage and, you know, stuff in it, they get this thing called like sludge, which contains obviously like a lot of nutrients, which be good for fertilizer. So then what they do is they take that and they apply it to agricultural fields. But often in that sludge are like microplastic particles. So then when you apply that to agricultural fields and say it rains, then that can be like pushed out into lakes or rivers or ocean environments. So that's kind of like an interesting one that I only learned about a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, holy cow. Besides that, obviously like direct pollution of people just like leaving their garbage. And then that can kind of break down. Runoff also, like just runoff from the roads, your car tires shed microplastics. So those can, like, again, when it rains, it can kind of just like get in there. Another one is what we're seeing in a lot of our remote lakes, which I'm sure we'll talk about after, but is like atmospheric deposition. So basically, like microplastics can be really light and they can be picked up by like wind and currents and then just kind of deposited into rural areas. And there's been some studies like testing this, and they found that atmospheric deposition, so like microplastics basically coming from the atmosphere,
Oh
is like
my
a really
God.
big source also. And then yeah, like even when you go somewhere, like your clothes, whether they're like polyester or even cotton, they like shed little microplastics, so that's probably a big source as well. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of different
Oh my goodness.
pathways of how they enter the environment. Some of them are more direct, like the ones I first talked about, but then the kind of like atmospheric deposition or like textile shedding are a bit more like you don't know exactly where they come from, but they end up in the environment.
Oh my goodness. That's really scary. It's like everywhere. Oh, wow. So among like all the threats to freshwater ecosystems, you know, how worried should we be about this one? Because like they're everywhere. So much of what we do in our daily life involves plastic and involves microplastics. And yeah, among like the other massive issues that we already experience with freshwater ecosystems, like what's kind of this one on the scale?
Yeah, I've been asked that question a couple of times before, actually, and it's an interesting one because like there's a lot of interest in plastics for kind of I think like obvious reasons, like we can see them and we see them in our environment, versus some other threat that you might not be able to see directly, or at least plastics kind of one that the public's kind of like taken hold on. But so kind of like a way to answer that question. So there's a lot in addition to like just quantifying them in the environment and being like, okay, there's microplastics here. There's a lot of lab work also going on to kind of test the effects of microplastics. So like what happens when, because we see microplastics in like animals that are sampled from the environment. But then if we like feed the microplastics in the lab, are we seeing these kind of like bad effects that would make it like, oh yeah, this is a really bad issue? And kind of interestingly, the first couple of studies that came out saw really negative effects. So like reduced growth, like decreased survival, like problems with reproduction. But they used like basically concentrations of microplastics. They like the doses were so high and like so irrelevant to what we're seeing in the environment. That people were like, well, we can't really say like these are having a negative effect because most of the time organisms aren't exposed to like tens of millions of microplastics at one time or in like 1 liter of water. Some people now have been trying to kind of simulate more like environmentally realistic exposure scenarios. So like, and the effects are pretty much like null at this point. They're not really seeing like these kind of like drastic effects to at least like growth and survival and reproduction. So it's kind of like a continuous question that's being asked in the field, like how basically how worried should we be? What are the effects? And people are kind of disentangling them. Like they have been shown to have negative effects, but whether those like transfer to what's actually happening in the environment, we're not 100% sure yet. I guess like we know like some threats already are really bad for freshwater ecosystems, like any sort of like habitat destruction, you know, warming waters even like can really affect organisms. We know how that happens. And I feel like plastics, like to compare those right now is a bit tricky just because we don't know the full story. But I think like, yeah, right now I wouldn't put it at like the top of the list in terms of like what's going on. Cause obviously like all these climate change related stressors are quite terrible right now. And we're not seeing that with plastic yet. Yeah.
Okay, let's get into your research and some of your findings too. So you mentioned that you sampled different lakes from that list that the ministry kind of has as part of their water quality monitoring program. But were there any kind of specific like criteria for those particular lakes that you decided to sample?
It was six of the eight lakes I sampled were part of that long-term lake monitoring program. And they were kind of strategically sampled because they were within like not a super far distance from the University of British Columbia because I live in Vancouver. And just in terms of like field work logistically, it made sense to sample lakes that were within like a 1 day travel. And then besides that, because we knew we wanted, so then that kind of like kept us more in like the southwest mainland and island region. Just because even coming into the interior where you guys are, that would be like a couple of day trip for me, and it's a lot of like travel and logistics with field work. But then what we wanted to do also is sample lakes that kind of were located in both like urban and rural areas to kind of get like a good distribution of the type of lakes and to understand like are lakes in urban areas, because you would think they would probably have a bunch more microplastics than lakes in super rural areas. So we wanted to also investigate that. So that's how we kind of did it. It was based on like urban and rural areas and also like distance from UBC, basically.
Okay, fair. And how do you measure microplastics? This is one question that I'm like so interested to learn more because microplastics can be so tiny. So like how the heck do you do that?
So like I guess to start in the field, what we did is we would go out and we would take these like water samples. Basically what we did, there's this thing called like a Chemomer water sampler that's like a big tube and you lower it down to your like specific water depth. So for us that was like 2 meters, and then you drop it down and then you basically like it goes underwater and it closes, so it like just collects like a grab sample of water. So we did that for a certain number of liters for each sample. So that was how we collected our water samples. So then what you end up having is just like these big jugs of like water, like lake water. And then we go back to the University of British Columbia. And what we do first is we filter that down. So to kind of get rid of like the bulk, and we just want to keep the particles that are present. So we have this, it's like a vacuum filtration device. That's the best way I can describe it. That's basically like, we have like a piece of filter. So like, if you could think like basically like a coffee filter, but it's like very fine mesh, like super small, super fine. And we pour the water into like kind of like this container, and then the filter's on the bottom there, and then it just goes through, and basically it would just capture all the particles or anything that's bigger than a certain size fraction, and the water just filters through there. So then we end up with these like basically filters that have all these particles, but also any sort of like biological materials that's bigger, that are bigger than 14 microns is the mesh size of the filter. So water goes through, but everything else gets caught. So then what ended up happening is some of our lakes were like super biologically productive. So had a ton of algae and stuff that then clogged the filters. So then what we had to do was basically do like a chemical digestion to try and get rid of all those kind of like biotic pieces that were attached to the filters. So then we would do a chemical digestion to try and just like isolate human made particles, so microplastics, and kind of get rid of anything that was natural. So we did a chemical digestion, and then after that we filtered it again just to get rid of those chemicals. And then what we do is we look at those filters under a microscope with super fine tweezers, and basically like you said, microplastics are super tiny, but if you look at it under a microscope, you can kind of obviously get a zoomed in look at it. And then also there's all these kind of like cues that would probably tell you something is, you know, a microplastic particle versus, you know, a piece of sediment or like sand or something like that. And basically those would be like microplastics often look like super smooth or like human made, like more like cellulose or natural materials, kind of have like these fraying edges. Anything with sort of color, we always test with tweezers. You kind of like prod it and see if it breaks apart easily. And if it doesn't, what we do is we pick it off of the filter using tweezers and then put it on this like transparent piece of paper with double-sided sticky tape. So we isolate that particle and we circle it and label like one. And those are all our suspected microplastics. And then the next step is we have to do a like spectral analysis of the particles. So basically like in like the least scientific terms, what you do is you take the particle and you put it under a laser and it like zaps it, but it's a specific type of laser, and it basically tells you like the composition of the particle. So like by zapping those things, it will be like, okay, this is polyester, or this is polyethylene, or this is like cellulose, which is a natural material, or this is like a mineral. So then that way, that's like a super necessary step in our field to make sure that we're actually reporting like pieces of plastics and not just like something that kind of looks like a microplastic, because there's actually like quite a few things in nature that kind of look like they're not natural, but then they actually just are. Important to kind of like confirm it, but it's like a super long like winded effort to kind of like identify microplastics.
How long does it take you to like pick through?
It's those? Like it's dependent on like how like dirty the samples are. So if there's like chemical digestion's good, but it doesn't break down everything. So it's not like you get these like really nice filters that have like different colored particles on it, and you're like, oh, that's a microplastics. Like it's a lot of like picking through, and also like they're so small that you have to use really fine tweezers. So you have to kind of have like steady hands. So like the whole time I was doing this, I like couldn't drink coffee in the morning because my hands would shake. So that was really a funny like 6 months. I was like, but yeah, it takes like probably like a couple of hours for each filter. But yeah, this whole project has been like a couple of year thing for me.
That's crazy. And I was also reading too that you sampled zooplankton. Why is that?
So we sampled zooplankton and water together to get an idea of like the fraction of microplastics that are present in the environment that are then ending up in the base of the food web. Because to kind of get an idea of like, okay, these things are, we know they're present in the water. There's not a whole lot of information on, you know, if zooplankton in nature are ingesting microplastics. It's kind of assumed just because a lot of them are filter feeders and they're kind of like filtering on, you know, small algal particles like algae or stuff like that, you would kind of assume that they're also probably just ingesting microplastics. And basically, like, zooplankton are the base of the food web, and they're really important for like fish and other larger organisms to eat. So the idea of sampling them also gives you an idea of like, okay, are the microplastics entering the food web through zooplankton, which could then get into like a bit of a trophic transfer situation, like if the fish are eating the zooplankton,
right,
and the zooplankton have microplastics, they also are then eating the microplastics inadvertently.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, my other question too, and I think I was kind of reading about this online, that you're going to be looking more at microplastics like in organisms. And I was going to ask you about fish. They're kind of at the bottom too. And yeah, have you like looked at studying fish at all yet? Or is that kind of the next step?
Yeah, I wasn't able to do it for the eight lakes just because it was kind of getting to be like a bit too much if I was going to add fish in there too. And also like fish is, when you start to work with fish, you need to get ethics approvals, and sampling at all the lakes for fish as well would be a bit more difficult and time consuming. So I wasn't able to do that, even though I would have loved to, because then we kind of like give you a proper idea. But the future work, I'm not going to be doing any more lake sampling just because that was just one chapter of my PhD, but I'm going to be looking more at kind of like the effects of microplastics on different lake organisms. So like my next step is like zooplankton, and then eventually it's going to be fish.
Yeah.
But more of like an effects side versus like a, you know, what's going on in the natural environment.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And what's kind of the most amount of microplastics that you've found in a lake?
We end up reporting in particles per liter, just because of our sampling methodologies. And it was about, I think, 1.6 microplastics per liter, which is like our highest.
Okay.
So it might not seem like that much originally, but of course, if you go like how many liters are in a lake, and then you can start to get into like, you know, quite a lot of microplastics. And we also only sampled in like one area of the lake. So then, but yeah, basically what we are seeing is between like, I think 0.2 and like 1.6 microplastics per liter. So then that kind of averages out to be like less than a microplastic per liter at all the lakes that we were sampling.
Okay. And yeah, were there any kind of like surprising things that you found either out in the field or things that you're finding right now while you're going through kind of your analysis?
So kind of, I would say the most interesting thing is, like I mentioned before, we sampled lakes that were like in urban areas and also in rural areas. So like rural areas, we went out to Port Renfrew on the west coast of the island, these lakes that you like had to basically go down like a non-existent road to get to. And there was like some evidence that like probably local kids in the area would also go there, but it was like nothing compared to, we also sampled Deer Lake, which is like just outside of Vancouver and Burnaby, which is like really heavily used. And also like Cultus Lake, also like really big recreational areas. And we didn't find like statistically significant differences between these lakes in terms of microplastics concentration, which is really interesting. Because we totally thought that like urban areas would contain a lot more microplastics compared to rural areas. But that's not what we saw. And that could kind of, there's like a bunch of different reasons that could maybe be true. But kind of what it points to is that like when we looked at all the lakes we sampled, and there's a lot of differences in the lakes, but a lot of this, well, the one big similarity was each lake had some component of like a recreation aspect to it. So people could go and use the lake. That's probably saying that like recreation is definitely a source of microplastics. And then also we found a lot of a specific type of microplastic, polyester fibers, which comes off of our clothing, just like textile shedding, which also leans into like probably recreation, people going, obviously you're wearing clothes most of the time and you're probably just like shedding. And then also the like shape of microplastics fibers, which I mentioned, which you can kind of like just think of like a fiber thread. They're basically, they look like that. Those are super lightweight and really easy to be transported like by a wind current.
Right.
So then often those can end up in the atmosphere and then be deposited, which makes sense on why we would then see like these rural lakes also containing microplastic fibers that we also found in our urban lakes. That was definitely like the most surprising part, because I was like, oh, for sure there's going to be differences, but there wasn't. There's more similarities actually.
Yeah, that's kind of scary, because you think of like, places just around the world, or even like in BC, that are, you know, more wild or less like touched by humans, but are experiencing like the exact amount of pressures from like a city, for example. Like,
totally.
So Natasha, what are some like next steps of your research? What are you now doing with all this baseline data that you've collected?
So my next steps are, I'm in the progress of publishing the kind of like lake baseline data for microplastic pollution in BC Lake. That will hopefully be published in the new year, which is really exciting, because then that would kind of get the info out to the general public, anyone who's interested.
Yeah.
And then I'm continuing to work through my PhD. So the next two chapters are going to be studying the effects of microplastics in combination with temperature warming, because obviously that's a huge climate change related stressor that's affecting all aquatic ecosystems. So I'm interested in investigating the kind of combined effects of microplastics and temperature warming on aquatic organisms. So I'm going to start with zooplankton in the new year. And then hopefully I'll be moving to fish in the summer. And basically I'm using the kind of like baseline data to then guide my exposure experiments to be kind of like environmentally relevant. So basically what I'm doing, like the concentrations are super low for what we found in lakes, or just like generally low compared to some of the other exposure experiments that we've that have been done in the literature and in the field before. And basically we're not going to just expose like, you know, one tiny zooplankton to one microplastic in 1 liter of water, because that probably wouldn't show us anything. But basically we're just going to use that as like our lowest control, or our lowest treatment. And then our treatments will scale up to be like, you know, maybe higher than what we're seeing in BC's lakes, but relevant to what other people have seen in other lakes, and then kind of increasing to kind of like a business as usual worst case scenario. Because obviously if we continue to use plastics and we continue to kind of create microplastics and microplastics continue to break down, their concentrations will increase in the environment. And then the other really useful thing from the baseline study, which will then guide my future experiments, is we're going to use types of microplastics that we saw across all the lakes. So like I mentioned, we saw a lot of polyester, so we know that's really present in the environment. So we're going to look at the effects of polyester on different organisms.
Okay, interesting. Wow. And so from the research that you've done so far and like analyzing your data, is it kind of fair to assume that like all lakes have microplastics in them?
Like, I think yes.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I know, like, not to go too global, but kind of the consensus in like the microplastics field is like they're everywhere that researchers have looked at them, whether they're like remote mountain lakes or like urban lakes or like the set of lakes I've sampled, people have found them. And if you're not finding them, maybe then that's like an issue of the sampling methodology. Like if you just take one water sample, obviously that's not like showing you the whole picture of the lake. So even though like for us, we got like baseline data on these lakes, it's definitely not the full picture, because we didn't look at like, for example, sediment or different areas of a water column, which could also have microplastics in them. But I think definitely in some capacity, there's microplastics in every lake, which is a bit of a sad thought, but it's also just kind of a fact of the matter at this time.
And how do you find like, researching and studying this kind of stuff? Like, is it hard to stay optimistic?
I feel like I'm kind of like a glass is half full person generally, but obviously like some days it does get a little tough, just because you're like, it's a complicated research topic and it's everywhere. And I think anyone working in any sort of environmental sphere is like, a, you know, optimistic on some sense, but also like you recognize that we are like badly impacting our environments and there's going to be repercussions. But I think like I'm really interested in microplastics and contaminants and how like humans impact our environments. So like it's something that I'm really interested in like learning a lot more about and kind of like increasing our knowledge. So I try and look at it from that lens instead of like a doomsday lens.
That's good. That's good. And maybe let's kind of switch over to more like positive things too. So in your opinion, like how can we maybe as a whole stop adding more microplastics into our local environment, because it is like in so many things that we use in the day, like even the clothes that we wear, it's like crazy.
So I think there is like there's a lot of ways that we can kind of like have individual action to then kind of make a difference, at least in your life. So definitely kind of trying to move towards, like, no one's perfect, or I don't live a zero waste lifestyle. I know some people who do, and that's really impressive, but I'm not there yet. But just kind of like, there are ways that you can especially like reduce or eliminate sort of like these single-use plastics or just things that you don't necessarily need. So like BC's got a lot of really great like zero waste stores that are popping up now, like soap dispensaries and stuff. So whenever you can use stuff like that, that's good, because that's just like, you know, eliminating buying something that's made plastic. Recycling is a bit of a tricky issue, because there's so many different like city by town in terms of what can actually get recycled and what actually gets recycled. So yeah, maybe just try and reduce your plastic footprint to begin with, because then it kind of gets rid of that issue. Another thing you can do is you can get these things that you can put in your washing machines that can then collect microplastic fibers. I
Oh,
think
I've
like
seen those.
Patagonia sells one. I think also there was a study out in Georgian Bay in Ontario of people, they like funded to have these things put into all the laundry machines that would then capture kind of the microplastics as they go out. Of course, nothing's perfect, but then you would kind of like empty this out, and that could kind of prevent it. So if you're interested in doing something like that, obviously there's a cost associated with it, but that's a good way to kind of, you know, tackle like microplastics that you're producing yourself. You could work to buy one of those and then kind of reduce your footprint that way. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of reduce your footprint. Plastic's obviously like a very good thing. Also, there's a lot, like you said, we use plastic a lot, maybe in some ways that are unnecessary with like single-use plastics, but also like plastic's really good for like a lot of like the medical field, and also just like the chair you're sitting in is probably like a solid plastic chair. And so definitely not like a get rid of plastics completely, because they do a lot of good, but kind of the ones that we don't really need, we should really start to reduce our use.
Totally. I agree completely. So once microplastics, like obviously they're very much already in our environment, and in our fresh water. And once they're there, like, is there a way of like removing them, like other than deliberately picking up the larger pieces of plastic, like from a shoreline?
Yeah, so like the shoreline cleanups are good in one a couple of senses, like because a lot of like the larger plastic items you get brought in with the kind of tides and currents, picking them up is a good thing for sure. There's some other innovations that I know they're trying out in different ports, like kind of like litter traps or something. I'm not 100% sure how they work, but also I think they're called sea bins, but if
Oh,
people
I've
are
seen those, and they
interested.
kind of like suck the garbage and they just kind of like float. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so those seem to be my old supervisor Chelsea in Toronto. They're doing a lot of that in the kind of like harborfront area of Toronto, and I think we maybe have some in Vancouver, but I'm not 100% sure. But those have been shown to kind of be able to collect like litter in water bodies. It probably would work somewhat for a lake as well. I'm not sure exactly like how small those things down but pro get down to, but probably like
Yeah.
larger plastic items definitely get caught by those. But those are like shoreline cleanups, and then those kind of like litter traps are the only things that I'm aware of actually work. The kind of idea that we could like engineer a tech way to kind of like suck all the plastics out of the ocean has been shown to be like totally not effective. So yeah, it's also the idea that it's probably better if we like stop it at the source, before it gets into the environment, but
And so one of the reasons why I kind of invited you on the podcast as well, I mean, I know you're not in like the Kootenays or in this area. Normally we usually have a local person, but I just thought that, yeah, your research just extends like to all of BC, to all of the lakes in BC. It is such an important and yeah, upcoming type of research that can be applied anywhere. And do you think that monitoring microplastics is a perimeter that like local groups, like such as Friends of Kootenay Lake, should incorporate into their monitoring programs? Like, is that something that would be easy for us to do?
I would definitely encourage it. There's different ways. Like obviously I was looking at particles that are quite small, so there was like a bit of like a lab and analytical procedure. But I know there's a group at I think the University of Ottawa or Carleton that has done some research using like citizen science methods, and also Ocean Diagnostics, which is like a startup on Vancouver Island. They do a lot of citizen science work to like evaluate microplastic pollution more in marine environments. It would be great for people to monitor microplastic pollution just in whatever kind of sense you can. So Like, I might not be the best person to like guide how citizen
Right.
scientists could do it, but I know there's definitely like resources out there. If people are
Okay.
interested, you could definitely get a program going.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. And I know too, like, I'm not sure if you've heard of this, but like, I think they're doing like monitoring in Okanagan Lake as well.
Yeah, I've
And
heard
looking
that,
at,
yeah.
yeah, and looking at microplastics there. So I've been thinking of maybe, you know, reaching out to them and seeing what process they use. But yeah, because I mean, like, just thinking about Kootenai Lake too and how valuable it is for our entire community, like our
Yeah.
culture, and so many people rely on the lake, the species. It would be really interesting, yeah, to know the presence of microplastics, and where they're coming from as well, and how
Yeah.
like us as a community can kind of, yeah, stop it right at the source. Yeah, but oh my goodness, this was so awesome getting to like learn about all this and hear like your research and your findings and all the work that you've been doing. Thank you so much for, yeah, coming on the podcast and, yeah, sharing this with all of us. This has been a topic that I've been like pretty passionate about as well. Like, I saw a YouTube video of Lauren Singer. I don't know if you know her. She was like the one who
No.
could fit a full year of trash in a mason jar.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna try to do that. Like, I'm gonna try to do this.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's like really hard.
It's so hard, yeah.
Yeah, but even just like, yeah, switching over really simple things like your shampoo to like a shampoo bar, or just like
Totally.
stainless steel razor, or just little different things in your life that you can, that are just like such an easy transition that overall have a really big impact, is something I've been really passionate about. And then I was like, you know, applying this to Kootenai Lake is such an important piece as well. And yeah, you've been doing like such awesome research that not a lot of people have been doing. So yeah, so thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to mention or share before you leave?
No, just thank you so much for having me. This has been really, really enjoyable. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of the Lake. Stay updated on what we've been up to. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Friends of Kootenai Lake. Read our blog posts at friendsofkootenailake.ca and sign up to our monthly e-newsletter. Huge thanks to our funders, the Regional District of Central Kootenai and FortisBC, for helping us bring these stories to you. Again, you're listening to Abuda by Jay Danley and featuring Rich Brown. You can hear more of Jay's stuff on his YouTube channel at Jay Danley Music. Thanks again for sharing, Jay.